have a fax for Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, send it to him at area code 702-727-8499. 702-727-8499. Please limit your faxes to one or two pages.
Good morning, everybody. It's a wild morning. I'm Art Bell, and we have Peter Davenport from UFO Reporting Center on in the first hour, and there are sightings of fireballs and objects going on right now and for the last 2 hours all over the continental U.S. It is remarkable. Switchboards are jamming all over the place. I wonder what's going on. Boy, do I wonder. Anyway, in a moment, you're in for a real treat. Joe McGonigal is going to be my guest. And let me tell you what he told himself, he told me about him. I am one of only two remote viewers from the project who was in both the Meade unit as well as the research side of the house at SRI slash SAIC. The other man, who is currently unknown to the public, has about 4 years on the research side. He is also an exceptional remote viewer. Within our lab, there are at least 6 of what I would call world-class viewers. In fact, I was the first viewer, number 001, recruited for Stargate, and spent a little over 7 years at Meade. When I retired from the military, I spent the rest of my 21 years in the project, working at the Cognitive Sciences Lab, while it was located at SRI and SAIC. I am still a full-time research associate with that same lab, which is now located with the Laboratories for Fundamental Research of Palo Alto. There is a website for that. We've got it up there now. By the way, we've also got Joe's personal website up, and nobody's ever seen that before because it's just now born. So if you want to read more about Joe, that's the place. We've got the link. Just go to my website, www.artbell.com, and click on the appropriate link, and we'll test Joe's site and see how much traffic he can take. In the past, says Joe, I've been challenged numerous times to do a live, real-time remote viewing on camera. I've successfully demonstrated this ability on double-blind targets for ABC's Put to the Test, Reader's Digest, Mysteries of the Mind, and The Paranormal World of Paul McKenna in London. I've also been filmed live at the J.B. Rhine Research Center in Durham while under the strictest of controls. All but one was a first-place match, the exception being a target done at the J.B. Rhine Center, which was a second-place match. We'll find out what that means. Contrary to common belief, I'm very well trained and well versed in what is now commonly referred to as controlled remote viewing, CRV, or what originally began as Mr. Ingo Swann's training methodology. Ingo Swann is considered the father of remote viewing. I'm also, he says, well trained in at least 4 other techniques developed and experimented with at SRI, SAIC. I was trained as a dowser while at SRI, have participated in a number of psychokinesis or PK experiments. I'm intensely interested in those. While some choose to say that I am just a natural psychic, I have never considered myself in that way. While I probably possess some degree of natural talent, since the beginning of the project, I have learned remote viewing is just like everyone else has. I've learned about it the hard way, through trial and error and hell of a lot of hard work over many years. From the latter part of 1982 until September 1st, 84, I was the only remote viewer doing the remote viewing at Fort Meade because everybody else was in training. It is one of the reasons I received the Legion of Merit for remote viewing. I had direct contact with and did remote viewing for 16 major agencies, the alphabet agencies of the U.S. government, from 78 through 95. Much of that remote viewing was successful. Some of it was not. 99.9% of it is still classified and has not been released. Wow! 99.9% of what was done is still classified. He's got a new book. It's called The Ultimate Time Machine. And that should certainly serve to whet your appetite for what's about to come. Joe McGonigal should not need an introduction to anybody who knows anything about remote viewing. For those who don't, we'll do a brief 101, and then we'll get down to biz. Here we go, all the way back east to Joe McGonigal. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello, Art. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, and I'm sure glad to have you back on. We did, of course, sort of a multiple thing one time, but having you back by yourself is a very, very good idea. Were you really remote viewer 001?
That's correct. That was my number while I was at Fort Meade. It was later number 372 while I was with the cognitive sciences lab.
99.9% of what you did with the government is still, you say, classified. What about cutting it down to about 70% this morning?
I don't want to spend any time in jail, so I kind of won't do that. But eventually, I suspect that most of it will probably be declassified. There are some things that will probably never be declassified. But
is there any way that you can, even in general, refer to the kind of material it was? In other words, was it mostly, for example, Cold War related?
The vast majority of it was Cold War related. There were a lot of things that essentially revolved around some very difficult targeting of missing items, downed aircraft, things like that.
All right. Here's a question. While most of it is still classified, you can surely tell me this. What percentage of success did you have in identifying specific locations of, for example, a downed aircraft? How successful was remote viewing for the government?
In terms of locational ability or locating missing items, it probably doesn't do as well as it does for other things where you're describing something. In the search for missing items, the difficulty comes in that you can have a near-perfect description of the location, but then you have to put it somewhere on the face of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The information that's generally provided isn't as detailed as one would like it to be in terms of defining a location.
Well, when they did the 30-minute Nightline, and it was announced to the world that our government for 20 years had been doing this project and was giving up on it, they said they were giving up on it because it didn't work.
Well, that's not really what they said. What they actually said at the time was it didn't have the kind of dependability that they needed or required to do the kind of intelligence work that they wanted to do.
Mm.
That's not exactly true.
I didn't think it was.
There's a lot of myth that's grown out of the amount of accuracy and whatnot around remote viewing. I think what's incredibly important to say here is that the kinds of jobs that we did with remote viewing were very much like the alternative healer kind of thing, where someone is declared essentially terminal by modern medical science, and they show up at the alternative healer's place of business, and the alternative healer can only claim 35% or 40% success rate, which is essentially 35% or 40% miracles.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, that still is an extremely high percentage, because by then you are the last gasp. I mean, police departments do that in murder cases when they're finally frustrated totally, they go to a psychic.
Exactly right. And they're usually able to develop new leads in some cases. In some cases, missing information is provided that lead them directly to the appropriate suspect or the solving of the crime.
What do you say to people who say they believe remote viewing is a bunch of hooey?
Well, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. What I base my judgment about remote viewing on is how solid the science is that supports it. There's been now 25 years of research that's been done in remote viewing, and most of that research has been replicated in many different labs as well as different universities. And statistically, it's carried across from lab to lab, regardless of who's doing the research or how the research is being done.
So scientifically, it is not really controversial. In other words, it is sufficiently established as real?
Oh, I would think so. I think the people that balk at that idea are the ones who immediately raise the question of, well, you can't tell us how the information gets from one place to the other. So obviously this isn't very good science, which is, of course, bunk. There's a lot of things in science that we don't know how it happens, but we do know it happens.
Are you a natural psychic?
Well, I'm about as natural as any human being walking the planet. In fact, we think, and this is pretty much established by the research, that every human being that walks on the planet is psychic to some degree.
Well, they're capable to some degree, but there surely are an awful lot of psychic bricks walking around out there.
Well, that's true, and it's the primary reason for that, Art, is they just they either have something in their belief structure that prevents them from acknowledging it, or there's something that there's something to their ability that they just don't pay any attention to.
So when we say you're a natural psychic, you are very open to this sort of thing. You've been involved in it for a very long time. You believe in it. And I guess in a way, that makes you a natural psychic. But you were the first remote viewer in the government program. So there must have been something about you at the moment you were chosen that caused you, above all others, to be chosen.
Well, actually, the initial selection process involved probably evaluating something like 2,000 people, and some of the requirements that they were trying to fill were had to do with whether or not the people they interviewed were open to this particular subject, as well as to whether or not they were skeptical, had a healthy skepticism towards it. They didn't want somebody who was a total believer, and they didn't want someone who was not critical in their thinking.
How can you tell me this? How did it develop that the government even decided to have this program?
Well, there's actually two reasons. The primary reason has to do with the fact that that there was a paper that was printed by Dr. Kenneth Kress in the CIA. It was originally classified secret. You can now find it somewhere on the internet. But back in the 70s, it was a paper written about remote viewing as being studied at SRI at the time, using Inga Swann and a psychic by the name of Pat Price. And in this paper, he proposed that it would probably be of value from an intelligence collection standpoint. Well, the Army saw that and had also done some studies of the survival rate of certain kinds of soldiers that were at great hazard during warfare. And they decided that one of the commonalities between these kinds of soldiers and ones who don't survive is that they're probably very psychic people. So they put the two together and decided that this might be worth something. This might be worth doing.
The suggestion there is that somebody is able to mentally, somehow, even subconsciously, discern where a particular danger is, psychically, I guess you could say, and avoid that danger and that bullet doesn't hit them. Is that right?
Yeah, they essentially zig instead of zag at the right time. It's probably because psychic functioning in general is probably taking place somewhere in the primitive brain and not in the more modern areas of the brain.
Oh, no kidding. Most people I've talked to have thought that the psychic ability occurred in the frontal lobe portion of the brain, not in the more basic parts of the brain.
Well, actually, the processing may be taking place in the frontal lobe, but the actual delivery of the information is probably taking place in the primitive part of the brain.
We talked for a second before we came on the air tonight, just to divert from where we're going. And I told you that we have these incredible numbers of reports of things coming out of the sky tonight, fireballs, objects being seen all over the country. I mean, the reports are just flying in from all over the country. Something's going on. And you said something kind of interesting. You said maybe there's a pending geologic event.
Right. There's been a lot that I've seen in print and have read, and there's a lot of conjecture about these sort of light phenomena occurring around or in areas just prior to a major geologic event. And I'm just kind of interested in seeing now, with all this going on, whether or not we have a major earthquake somewhere in the continental United States, or whether or not we have some geologic event that equates to this sightings.
Fascinating. All right. You have written a book called The Ultimate Time Machine. Time is something that really has been on my mind a lot lately, the nature of time. And most remote viewers that I've talked to have suggested that moving through time, in effect, is possible with remote viewing to the past or to the future, and obviously the present, which the Army would be mostly interested in, I'm sure. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, basically. There's some conditions, however. When one attempts to remote view the past, one of the conditions is that you're going to be rubbing a lot of fur the wrong way. If you go back and remote view an event, for instance, in the past, and then report what you see from a remote viewing standpoint,
you're ruining their revisionist history.
Well, yes. History, in my opinion, and I say this quite extensively in the book, history is pertinent to where you're standing in your sort of geopolitic and theologic view of the world within that time frame. We are constantly rewriting history to fit our needs of the time.
Is there a lot of difficulty when you begin viewing theological events?
Geological events?
Theological. Yes.
Yes, there are. One of the problems that I deal with is I, of course, have certain beliefs and constructs, and even though I may be blind to the particular target of interest, that is, if I understand it's centering around a theological belief, certainly my likes and dislikes come into play. So I have to be very careful about how that might interfere with my conjecture.
How do you separate yourself from your belief system when you're looking at something close to it?
You can't, really. That's one of the downsides to any psychic functioning. The person carries in their own prejudice, their own desires, likes, dislikes, that sort of thing.
But the whole idea of the disciplines that were recorded over a long period of time was to cut through that. You're saying they don't entirely work.
No, you can't. You know, that would be asking a human being to become a machine, and that's not quite possible. There are things you can do to reduce the effect, but in actuality, there will still be an effect. So there has to be an independent analysis of the information.
Joe, have you ever looked at the life of Christ?
Yes, I did, in fact. It was not a remote viewing. It was an explorer session with Mr. Robert Monroe at the Monroe Institute.
Oh, I interviewed Robert Bob before he died, just before he died. Good. It's a good place to hold it. We're at the bottom of the hour. What a question. Have you ever viewed the life of Christ? The answer is yes. The Monroe Institute of all places. My. When we come back, we'll ask about that. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Love, 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 love. It's a wild ride tonight. Come on along.
To talk with Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from outside the U.S., first, dial your access number to the USA. Then, 800-893-0903. If you're a first-time caller, call Art at 702-727-1222. From east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. Or call Art on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye.
Wild ride, that's what we've got going on. Good morning. Joe McGonigal is here. He is our nation's first military remote viewer, number 001. A natural psychic? I don't know. Depends on the definition, I guess. We'll get back to him and the viewing of Jesus. See how I start with the easy questions?
This is the end of side one. Please leave the cassette exactly where it is, flip it over, and begin again.
And now, back to the best of Art Bell.
Well, all right, here we go. Joe, welcome back. You notice how I start with all the easy questions first.
Right, I noticed that.
But that is also of intense curiosity to me. And so you had a session with Robert Monroe on the life of Jesus. What did you find?
Well, it was kind of an interesting session in that there was a lot of interesting details about why there's a great deal of similarity between the man Jesus and some of the other prophets that have existed over the course of history.
Was Jesus a supernatural being?
I suspect he was, and there was some things within the Explorer session that would seem to indicate that. There's actually a full transcript of the entire session in my new book, The Ultimate Time Machine.
You equated him to a prophet.
A prophet in the sense that's how we regard a lot of people on the face of the planet regard Jesus as a prophet.
Was he viewed as indeed what Christians believe him to be, the Son of God? I'm going to get you in trouble, I'm sure, if I can.
No, I think the answer is yes, in that we all are the creations of the Creator. I mean, he as a representative of the Creator on Earth was certainly a son or a construct of the Creator. So,
is this Joe McGonigal, the remote viewer, saying this, or Joe McGonigal, the true believer?
Actually, it's me reporting what was reported, trying to report what I can remember about the events of the session.
So this came out of the session, and in other words, I'm saying the session determined there was a creation force, there is a creator, and this was a man, a supernatural man, associated with that creator.
Right. I would agree with those conjectures. The thing to remember is that this was a what Bob used to call an Explorer session. It was done in an altered state under the effects of what he used at the time. It's a thing called hemisync, which is their technique that they use.
You have a hemisync tapes.
Right, and it was not a remote viewing, but it was a very interesting session in that it was still a what I would call a blind session. In other words, going in, I had no idea what I was reporting on. Also, I was unable to remember most of what I had said over the 2 hours or 2.5 hours that it lasted.
That's remarkable. That really is chilling. You had no idea whatsoever what the target was.
No, not going in. Eventually, I think I realized what it was. So you have to read the transcript with a little salt, because I, you know, obviously have some personal, you know, feelings about it, which I can't help but mix in with the reporting, I'm sure.
May I ask this? During the session, as you were saying whatever you were saying, was there feedback being given to you that would have suggested to you the target?
Eventually, yes, that did occur. What Bob would do is he would take whatever statements I would make and ask questions based on them, but in actuality, he knew what he was asking questions about, so the way he asked questions could very well have tainted the results.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great danger that occurs also in remote viewing, and it's very, very difficult to guard against, which is one of the reasons why anybody in the room with a remote viewer or anybody interacting with a remote viewer should be as blind to the target as a remote viewer is.
But you have done some very specific tests, haven't you? Extremely well-controlled tests.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed double blinds, where everything is done to essentially guarantee that no one knew what the target was.
One of these, or some of these, were at Stanford?
Oh, yeah. Stanford, actually at SRI International. It's not called Stanford Research Institute any longer, but SRI International and Science Applications International Corporation.
How would a test like that go? Can you describe what a double-blind test of this sort would be like?
Well, yeah, I can talk about what we term an intelligent simulation. We had an agency come to us, and they essentially said, we have some targeting material for you, and they gave us a black and white photograph of an individual that no one in the lab knew.
Right.
And they gave us three times on a specific date in the future, and they said, describe where this person is at each of these times.
Huh.
And that was the some knowledge that anyone in the lab had. We did the targeting, and we produced very detailed descriptions of the events and places that this person was located at.
Was located at, or would be located at?
Would be located at.
How far into the future?
It was a matter of perhaps a week.
A week? Oh, my God.
Yeah. In one case, he was, this particular individual was driving through an area at a specific time, and in another case, he was standing in a top secret facility that builds atomic weapons. Another case, he was standing next to a linear accelerator that was in operation.
Holy smokes.
Things like that.
And you guys came up with this?
Right. We described all four locations for all four events with unbelievable detail and accuracy. That was later independently judged by that group of people that tasked us.
Didn't you ever wonder, when you were given an assignment of this kind, whether you were setting somebody up to be assassinated or hit, or who the hell knows what?
Well, one of the unique things about remote viewing is that if you're on to that degree, Art, you're going to know whether or not you're being set up. In fact, over 21 years, I've had at least 7 or 8 occasions when people have given me targets that were set up, set up targets, or where no target actually existed.
Huh.
I've not been fooled any of those times yet.
You mean where people intentionally gave you totally baloney information as a test?
Right. I can give you an example. The most difficult target I ever worked was, I was given the picture, I was given a black and white photograph of a room, and they essentially said, there's something in this room we're very interested in, and describe it. And I kept getting sort of a picture of a Y, you know, three lines intersecting in the shape of a Y. And
yes.
I worked on that for probably 2 days and finally realized that it was the inside and outside corner, or perception of the corner of the inside and outside of an empty box. And I said, there is no target, it's an empty box. And that fact was true.
And it was true?
Yes.
That must curl the hair of researchers to have something like that happen. I mean, it really would curl my hair.
Well, it, it's almost as good as doing an actual target, where it's impossible to know what the target is, and you produce detail on it, and it defies probability.
If remote viewing in any area had a 30 or 40% success rate, I personally, and I know we're going to go around on this, but I don't for one second think the government has actually stopped doing it. Now, most remote viewers that I've talked to, right across the board, have uniformly insisted the program is over.
That's correct.
You join that crowd, I take it.
Yes, I do.
How can that be?
Well, it has a lot to do with politics, mostly. If in order for it to exist within the government, or to be somehow franchised by the government, someone has to take responsibility for it. And no one that works 38 years of their life to get to a position of authority that they may hold is going to risk that career. They'll want someone else to do that. They may want to task remote viewers, but they just quite frankly don't want to hold the ball of responsibility. It's devastating to a career politically.
But with a documented success rate, let me ask you this. Do you think the Russians are still doing this?
Well, I know they are.
You know they are. All right.
Yeah.
So there you are. Regardless of what people say about the Cold War, mm-hmm. things are as unstable as they have ever been, probably the most unstable in Russia now, scarier than most times during the Cold War, right now. And anything could happen over there, and they're doing it, and we're not.
I agree, things are a lot scarier. A lot of the controls that existed in the Cold War don't exist any longer.
Yeah.
As far as the Russians doing remote viewing research and continuing with it, they, like many other countries overseas, it's sort of psychic functioning as sort of part of their culture. They not only believe that it's real, but, you know, everybody from Aunt Millie through Grandma, whatever, have visions, and it's part of their natural culture.
So, in other words, the kind of political pressure there is here is non-existent over there with regard to this kind of program.
Correct. It's essentially non-existent. The kind of political pressure they put up with over there is to produce probably consistency in the results, or to produce high enough level results that it can be used effectively or pragmatically in some way.
Are there very good Russian remote viewers?
I suspect there are. The Cognitive Sciences Lab, it has some connection with some of those researchers, some of the prime researchers in the remote viewing arena. And some of their remote viewers' material has been seen, and it appears to have at least the same quality as some of the viewing that was done by some of the American remote viewers.
Well, if it's got that success level, and we're not doing it and they are, that really scares me. That really scares me. And it should scare everybody, because I've been hearing a lot of not good things about the Russians lately. Do you have any remote viewing information with regard to our future relationship with Russia?
Yes and no. A lot of what I would say would probably have to be called conjecture based on remote viewing.
Uh-huh.
But in my own sense of things, I would say that the Russian people have passed the point of no return in terms of their condition and where they're going and changes and whatnot. I think that what we're looking at in their disarray is we're seeing what naturally takes many, many years to change. I mean, they're going from a totalitarian, rather ignorant, and oppressive government to one of, election by free vote and more of a capitalistic kind of economy. So I suspect they're going to go through a lot of turmoil, and we're going to go through it with them. And I think it's a good idea that we do, because we're the ones that can guarantee that they stay on that road.
So we should do our best, but you have no specific information about any future clash with the Russians.
I don't. If there's a clash, it probably is going to be Russian against Russian, I suspect. Not so much involving us in any way.
What about the use of nuclear devices? I'm sure this would be a hot topic with certainly the government and with the American people in general. It is. Will there be another use in anger of a nuclear device?
I think that's inevitable. That's on the horizon. I think it'll happen probably in our lifetime. It'll probably be a tactical nuclear weapon, small yield, perhaps a quarter of a megaton. It'll probably be targeted against a specific city. I think, however, that when we're sort of sitting and thinking about, my God, would this be one of our cities?
Yes.
One of the things we have to take into consideration is the very distinct possibility that it could be actually used by someone else on a third world nation. The situation has reached a point of criticality where within the third world there are probably three or four major factions that are vying for power, and a tactical nuclear weapon detonated on the borders of, say, Afghanistan and Iran would be tantamount to starting a third world war within the third world. And I'm more afraid of that happening than I am having tactical nukes show up in continental United States.
Yeah, well, as I listen to you, I'm trying to delineate between what you are conjecturing based on current events and what you may know based on what you have remote viewed. Can we nail that down? In other words, you have seen through remote viewing the use of a nuclear device, or am I stepping into ground here that you can't comment on?
We're kind of drifting into an area I'd rather not comment on.
Yeah, I had that feeling. I'll try and...
Let me put it this way, Art. One of the things I do know about remote viewing is that while we have a lot of superior technology for locating nuclear weapons-grade material, once a terrorist organization gets an 8 to 15-hour head start with it, it opens up the possibility of having to search huge areas with that technology. Remote viewing can almost guarantee an 80% reduction in that search area.
If you were to view a specific incident about to occur, you know, that those hours were ticking off,
mm-hmm.
What would you do with that information? Would you have a channel to get that information to the right people?
Yes, I always have a channel I can get the information to people that I think may be concerned or could use it, and I would do that if I felt that I was right. One of the problems is whether or not someone would take action based on it, and I would never expect anyone to take any kind of action based purely on remote viewing. What I would expect is that they might take the remote viewing information and use it as a targeting mechanism for other techniques or other methodologies to...
Well, let's put it this way. If you were to make the call to a contact you have and say, look, such and such group has got a nuclear device, they're intent on using it, it's in transport right now, would they take that from you seriously enough to apply other intelligence assets immediately to check it out?
I would think so. I think there are people that at least know me by number. They see 001 on it, they'll probably do something with
it. Pay attention, yeah.
I mean, there's no way I could ever guarantee that. There's no way I'd get any feedback from that sort of thing.
As I said, I am intently interested in the nature of time, and I would like to talk to you about that, and you're a perfect guy to talk to, because you wrote a book called The Ultimate Time Machine, which, of course, is remote viewing, correct?
Well, actually, the ultimate time machine is the human being.
The human being? Right. Yeah, true. Using that discipline, right?
Well, actually, what I mean by that is, in the context in which I understand time, I don't believe that there's a past except that which we create. I think we live in a very immediate past of our own creation. There's no such thing as the present, and the future is purely a result of our actions today. So, in effect, we as the ultimate time machine are creating this illusion of time and living within it.
Uh-huh. All right, we'll pick up on the whole question of time when we come back, top of the hour, so soon. And yes, we will open phones for you to talk to Joe. Joe McGonigal, remote viewer 001, is my guest. He's a heavyweight. If you're curious about remote viewing, don't touch that dial.